This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
You heard Hillary Clinton say that she thought this was not going to be a big deal, that she could power through it. Is that the issue, or is it an issue of transparency?
I think it's more an issue of transparency. I mean, I think this is a health issue that many people could identify with. I think powering through would be seen as admirable. Unfortunately, as happens so many times, it seems, especially in this campaign, more has been made of it because the Clintons have done this drip, 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 fight for control of information, and ultimately it looks like they're hiding something, which is never a good look.
Mark, how much are voters supposed to know about a candidate's health issues? If she thought that she could power through and it was no big deal, what's wrong with her thinking, I'll get through this? Are we supposed to know everything that's going on in a candidate's life when it comes to health?
Well, look, I mean, there's not a rule book sitting here which we can refer to.
What do the rules say, Mark?
You know, I wish we could refer to one. It would be a lot easier. We have a lot less to talk about. But this is a tension that the Clintons especially have been, you know, in the middle of for many, many years. I mean, Hillary Clinton used the phrase zone of privacy that everyone is entitled to in public life. Mm-hmm. This goes back about 20 years. It's a negotiation that's been constant, tenuous,
but
and has only gotten more complicated.
Don't you think it's noteworthy that President Obama's White House press secretary said yesterday, quote, there's a reason that we have had a long tradition in this country of individual candidates disclosing information about their health. We are electing someone to the most powerful job in the world. And there shouldn't be a double standard. Not only Hillary Clinton, but Donald Trump should both be open and transparent about their health.
No, David Axelrod, back to your point about an Obama advisor said it's a matter of stealth, not health. That's the issue.
This shouldn't be that complicated. I mean, it's not even a double standard. There should just be a standard. And
but
most
there is a standard because Robert Gibbs, another Democrat, as they all seem to be breaking ranks, also said, look, there comes a time when a protective media pool needs to be a part of a candidate's daily life. There is a standard, and it's letting the media be with you essentially 24/7 at this point.
Right, but this is an election in which rule after rule or unwritten rule after unwritten rule has been broken.
And just because it has doesn't mean that it should continue. Mark Leibovich is an American journalist and author, chief national correspondent for the New York Times. I think his approach is reasonable here in his discussion. That there should be some transparency, and it's very, very difficult, I believe, you know, for progressives, for the left, to really support what's going on. After all, I mean, if you and I were vying for a job, how much information, you know, depending on what it is that we had to do, would have to be open for our potential bosses to understand? And here it is, the number one job in the land. I don't know. In a sense, you know, that there's a job that's more important. We're just going to have this casual approach and allow a candidate to write the rules. What Mark is pointing out here is that, he says there's no rules. Well, there's some traditions. There's some things to expect here. And again, with the Clintons, we can expect that there's going to be secrecy. There's going to be a drip, drip, drip of information, and we're going to have to pull every string that we possibly can. And they're going to leave us in that area of plausible deniability, another area, you know, of space that, Mark didn't directly refer to. But it comes in reporting. It comes with the territory when it is your job to report the Clintons. And, of course, being the powerhouse that they are, you know, if you don't play according to their rules, then you find yourself on the outside looking in, and you need to be on the inside in order to do your job. So what happens is you have a conforming media, and you have the rest of us wondering what's going on. And meanwhile, Hillary is allowed to talk about transparency and other nebulous things that aren't realized and leave us all in a quandary. And then we're all accused of being conspirators. Hey, welcome to politics 2016. Why not? Especially when the Clintons are involved. This is Bill Martinez. We're live. It's just about 5 minutes after the top of the hour.
Think you're fat? You might just be bloated. Find out by calling now for a free trial of Nubiotics, the new breakthrough that flattens bloated bellies fast. For a free trial, call 1-800-990-1243. Strict limit of one per household.
I used to be plagued by pot belly and constant bloating. After taking Nubiotics, my belly flattened and continues to get flatter. My sense of bloating and discomfort is gone.
If you've got a big belly, you might not be fat. You might just be bloated. Nubiotics is scientifically formulated with natural ingredients to flatten bloated bellies fast by cleansing pounds of rotting food and toxic sludge from your body. It even combats periodic heartburn and acid reflux. If your belly flattening results are too dramatic, simply reduce use to every other day. Think you might be bloated? See how much flatter Nubiotics makes your belly. But hurry, call now for details while we're still giving it away for free. 1-800-990-1243. That's 1-800-990-1243. 1-800-990-1243.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Stop.
Hey, well, hello, America. Bill Martinez here with you. Now on the west coast of California, making our way back east, just about 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Michael Rubin is with us, a resident scholar with the American Enterprise Institute, former Pentagon official, Middle East regional politics expert, Iranian expert, Syrian, Persian Gulf expert. He's got it all down. Of course, the author of the book Dancing with the Devil, The Perils of Engaging Rogue Regimes. Michael Rubin, always good to have you with us. How are you doing, sir?
Pretty good, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Hey, here we are this past weekend, 15 years after 9/11, and I'm sure you were just covered in emotions and memories and all that 9/11 still represents to the core of America.
You know, absolutely, but it was also two other anniversaries as well. There was, of course, the Benghazi anniversary, which was really an outgrowth of that war on terrorism and al-Qaeda, which we're still fighting. It wasn't the result of some tasteless internet video. But, you know, there's also another 9/11 anniversary that's relevant, especially now, and it was actually last Sunday was the 75th anniversary, Bill, of Charles Lindbergh's nativist and anti-Semitic America First speech, in which less than 2 months before the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, he urged Americans to stay out of the war, that we would be left alone if only we left the rest of the world alone. And, of course, that came crashing down. When you're faced with these aggressive ideologies, sitting at home and putting your head in the sand is seldom a good idea.
You know, interesting you should bring that up, Michael, because there are lots of voices running around these days that are proving less than valid. They lack veritas. They lack any kind of back, any type of fulfillment. So in the absence of fact, a lot of theory, a lot of opinion can run out there, but we have enough history to look back on to see what is going on with our national security and what's missing, don't we?
Well, you're absolutely right, Bill. You know, I do a lot. Of course, I tend to be much more right of center, much more conservative. But in my conversations with my colleagues and my friends who are left of center, people almost lament, because on one hand, there are facts out there which across the political spectrum we should be able to agree on. For example, Iran is a sponsor of terrorism. Bashar al-Assad is a murderous thug. We can debate the policy prescription that comes out of that, but we're getting to the point where some people in the public debate simply want to deny the facts, deny the reality of the character of our adversaries, and be them China, be they Vladimir Putin, be they Ayatollah Ali Khamenei in Iran. It's not wise to whitewash or to adjust, calibrate policy toward an imaginary adversary. We have to actually deal in the world of reality.
What gets lost in translation here, Michael? I mean, you and I have agreed on most of the things that we've discussed here, but it just seems that between the facts of, you know, here's these bad players, this is what they do, now when it's time to talk about the prescription, something gets lost in translation.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, and part of it, I think, is this American culture, if you will, of self-flagellation, of introspection, and that's not all bad. I mean, we consider our actions, we think through them, but there tends to be a pattern, and it's a bipartisan pattern, Bill, in which every new president that enters the Oval Office decides that the problem that America faces has more to do with his predecessor than with his adversary. And unfortunately, in the past, both Democrats and Republicans have learned that, no, it's actually the adversaries that matter. That seems to be wearing thin. The self-flagellation just shows a detachment from reality. As someone who's lived with the Taliban, lived in the Islamic Republic of Iran, people find it silly that Americans beat themselves up the way we do over so many different things.
Well, Michael, one of the things that I find quite lacking is the issue of leadership. Leadership points out where we are and a direction of where we need to be. And leadership is that difference to get you there where you need to be, whether it has to do with immigration policy, whether it has to do with national security, and on and on. It would seem that the modern era presidents are more controlled by polling evidence and polling suggestions than they are the reality of what's going on.
Well, I absolutely agree with you on that, Bill. I mean, certainly leadership means the ability to defy the polls every now and then, because the polls can shift with the wind. We shouldn't be guided by the media. We need to be proactive rather than reactive. But there's also another sense. I mean, this pride in American values seems to be dissipating. If we look at the most recent controversies with regard to the National Football League and the flag, what a lot of people forget is Martin Luther King and the protesters fighting for civil rights marched under the American flag. Cesar Chavez, working with labor and so forth, marched under the American flag. So this notion that somehow the American flag doesn't represent the values of freedom and liberty for all, that's a relatively recent construct, an artificial one, and if I may say, Bill, a very corrosive one.
Well, it is, and Michael, it is. It really points to the ignorance of what the nation holds here and how it's being indoctrinated, this anti-American sentiment that we're so willing to cast aside, you know, the blood, the honor, the treasure of those that have gone before us that fought for the American dream. Now, it may be missing. I mean, we may be missing the mark. No doubt 7 out of 10 of us say we're on the wrong track. I agree with that. Okay, so, but do we just totally unhinge ourselves from those core values that brought us to the dance to begin with?
No, you're absolutely right. We don't. And I mean, the beauty of the American Constitution, the beauty of American leadership throughout history is while we have corrected mistakes, while we have always lived in the time period in which we are, we have been a leader in order to achieve much better. I mean, people talk about the United States and slavery, of course, and that's a stain on our history. But it's as important to remember the tremendous sacrifices that the United States made to end slavery, and that too often is forgotten in the debate.
And let's not forget that blacks and whites were involved there. I mean, many whites fought on behalf of civil rights, and they have been there all along historically. But, you know, here it is. It's all about the deprivation and reparations that are due black America, and you go, when is enough enough here?
No, you're absolutely right, and one of the important things that we really need to resolve in America is what is more important, equality of opportunity or equality of result. And what I would argue, we very much need to focus on equality of opportunity, but it is tremendously unfair and corrosive to the notions of individual liberty if we try to predetermine equality of result.
You see, and that's my hope, Michael, just with what you just said, in having the equality of opportunity. It's not that we're going to get 100% of the people to buy into that. We just need a small percentage of people, something like 5%, that suddenly wake up and say, you know what, I've had it with the government's ideas of my life. I feel restricted. I feel held captive and held down by what the government says that I should make and where I should be, as opposed to what is driving me intrinsically that says I should dream bigger dreams, that I have, something absolutely awesome to bring to the culture, to bring to my family, the neighborhood, the country, quite possibly. And, that's my hope, is that America, once again, Michael, will dream big dreams. This still is by virtue of our founding fathers and so much of the DNA that pre-exists here, this still is the land of opportunity. And I think it's still available.
Amen to that, Bill.
Well,
agree.
More with Michael Rubin. We're going to talk ransom on the other side of the break. Stay with us, America. It's just about 15 minutes after the top of the hour.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America. Americans are banking on the go more than ever, as nearly two-thirds cite mobile or online as their preferred method of banking, a significant increase from last year. The third annual Bank of America Trends in Consumer Mobility report found mobile and online banking, as well as digital payments, continue to grow in popularity among U.S. consumers. More than half surveyed cite they actively use a mobile banking app, and 57% would consider or already use a peer-to-peer money transfer service from their bank. Two in five would use or already use their smartphone to make purchases at checkout. Michelle Moore, Head of Digital Banking, Bank of America.
This year's report demonstrates the growing reliance on our mobile devices to navigate daily life and manage finances. It's important for us to be where our customers are, which is why we continue to deliver new features that provide increased convenience to our more than 20 million active mobile banking users.
For more, visit bankofamerica.com.
Is negative content or comments on the web affecting your personal or professional reputation? Unfavorable comments, embarrassing pictures, videos, legal documents, and negative articles can ruin your personal life, your career, or your business. It happens a lot, and it's just not fair. But what can you do? ReputationDefender.com can help protect your good name. Get a free consultation now. Call 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Call right now for a free expert reputation analysis. It's easy to squash the unfair attacks with our patented system, and the analysis is absolutely free. Make the best things about you jump out in searches. Protect your personal and professional reputation, your business, and your income. Get your free reputation analysis from ReputationDefender.com right now. Call 800-831-0771. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com today.
Are you one of the 70% of Americans that want to own your own business, afraid to leave the security of your current job to pursue your dreams? I'm Pharmacist Keith. Dr. Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, and myself want to show you a low-cost way to create your own business, working around your current job schedule, creating an extra income for you and your family by joining his crusade, spreading his message of better health. To learn more, visit radio.recordedvideo.com, radio.recordedvideo.com, that's radio.recordedvideo.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
This is an alert. If your business or church is building this year, you're about to pay more than you should. This could mean thousands of dollars more for your office, retail space, church, or warehouse. A General Steel building can save you as much as half the cost and time of similar conventional construction. And we're offering rebates of up to $20,000 to help you build today. Call General Steel for free information that could save you thousands. Call 866-91-STEEL.
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 Oh, well, he's very popular, Ed. The sportos, the motorheads, geeks, bloods, wastoids, dweebies, they all adore him. They think he's a righteous dude.
Bill Martinez, live.
Hey, we're back. back with you, America. 19 minutes after the top of the hour. We love the Dweebies because they vote. That's why. Michael Rubin is with us, former Pentagon official, AEI scholar. His book, Dancing with the Devil, The Perils of Engaging Rogue Regimes. I mean, a perfect title for the season that we're in as we continue to deal with $400,000, $400 million, I should say, going to Iran. And, of course, our president and his media would insist it is not ransom. But, Michael, I say that is in the eye of the beholder. It's not necessarily in what the president says.
Well, you know, when it comes to Washington's spin, Bill, it doesn't matter what people in Washington think. It's the perception outside the country. We have the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps say absolutely this was ransom. And it wasn't just $400 million. The administration, for the most transparent administration, according to their promises, only let slip afterwards. It was actually $1.7 billion. And the most important aspect of this payment that was given to Iran was that it was in cash, which has been unprecedented since the 1848 treaty, which ended the Mexican-American War.
Wow. Well, Michael, you know, the other, first of all, you get this bundle of cash and that was dropped off in the dark of night. It just so happened to be tied into four hostages being released. But, you know, that's a non sequitur. That has no relevance there, according to the administration. Then you have, and of course they say they had to do this because they didn't have any proper channel in which, you know, in banking arrangements and that sort of thing. But then 2 days later, they're wire transferring an odd number, a consistent odd number. And along with it, it seems like some kind of random commission. I don't know, I'm just kidding here, if that went to the Clinton Global Initiative or whatever, but it just seemed like it was some sort of, you know, like another, well, we'll just throw in another $10 million on the side here, you know, roughly. You know, like that was odd. I mean, 99, and then all of a sudden, oh, yeah, and then another $10 million, like we're paying off somebody.
Well, you know, Bill, you're absolutely right. This is the way drug laundering happens and money laundering and that sort of thing. When I testified before the House Financial Services Committee on this, the Treasury Department official had said, well, actually, we did the $99 million because our computer simply can't handle enough digits for the $100 million. But the point of this is that when they say that there is no mechanism to wire the money to Iran, that's absolutely false. Even under the banking sanctions, there was a humanitarian exception which we had used. The only reason why the money was delivered in cash is because the Iranian government asked for it to be in cash. And the important thing here is it's a lot easier to track money from a bank account rather than money delivered in cash. You know, back in 2011, I believe it was, when Iran plotted to blow up a car bomb in Washington, D.C. to murder the Saudi ambassador, yes, the reason why we detected that plot was we were monitoring bank accounts. When it comes to cash and the fungibility of cash, we're now operating blind. And remember, Bill, a suicide belt, according to Hamas, only costs $1,500. We've just given Iran $1.7 billion.
Can you imagine? This is incredible. And here it is. That money has all been cleaned. It's been purified, laundered, the way in which it was handled. As you say, I mean, even drug companies or drug lords would look at this and applaud what they did.
Well, you're absolutely right. And when the Obama administration says, hey, it's not a ransom, remember, we had an agreement back in December of 2015 to basically exchange Iranian prisoners for American hostages, because part of this deal wasn't just the cash, Bill. It was releasing Iranians who had been convicted of trying to smuggle nuclear goods to Iran. And then in December of 2015, the Iranians said, well, we want a little bit more. And the Obama administration had become so desperate for a deal, that's when they ponied up the $400 million, and then it became $1.7 billion. The Iranians then said, well, we want it in cash, which, again, hadn't been done in more than 100 and almost 170 years.
And here it is. We, the people, are complicit in this because of what this administration has done. Michael, what about reparations? Speaking of reparations, for the hostages going back into the 70s, supposedly that is money that's owed by the Iranian government.
Well, this is something that came up before the House Financial Services Committee, in that back in the year 2000, a law was passed that said this $400 million, this principal that Iran had put into an American bank to purchase military goods right before the Islamic Revolution, mm-hmm. that money would be used to pay victims of terrorism. And basically what has emerged is the Obama administration simply violated that law. They simply ignored it, and they have given away the money. Now, what the State Department had said is, we've already paid victims of terrorism back in the year 2000. The problem is there's been a lot of victims of terrorism since then, mm-hmm. and now not only has Iran gotten this money in cash, but in theory the United States government and the taxpayer could be on the hook to pay victims of terrorism, victims of Iranian terrorism. So the Iranians conduct terrorism against Americans, and the American taxpayer pays for it twice.
Well, speaking of 9/11, wasn't there a law just passed that said that, you know, those families now have recourse?
Well, you know, that's absolutely right. And while the Iranians had some background complicity with al-Qaeda, that law focuses mostly on Saudi Arabia. And, you know, some people will say, hey, diplomatic necessity, Saudi Arabia shouldn't be held responsible for this. My feeling on this is, if you sponsor terrorism, you pay the price.
Michael, again, getting back to that that weird $10 million or so that was kind of lopped on top of the $99.99, you know, maybe the Treasury Department has something here, Michael, is maybe we can manage our budget just by going along with his premise that we can only spend $99.99 because our computers don't, you know, they can't handle the zeros. Maybe that might be enough. What do you think?
I think the government would be much more efficient if none of the government computers could factor in any expense more than six figures.
Yeah, you mentioned what could happen here. So anyway, you know, to me, it's driving me nuts that $10 million flying out there. I mean, that is commission. That's something that is beyond the $99.99 that somehow just kind of, hey, we're doing this. We want cash. And oh, yeah. I mean, like all of a sudden somebody said, you know, I need a dowry for my daughter or something. You know, where does that money go?
Well, you know, one of the most troubling aspects of this is that none of the government witnesses at the congressional hearing, and we had people from the State Department, people from the Treasury, people from the intelligence community and so forth, no one was able to say who delivered that money and to whom was it delivered.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they talked about how the Iranian representatives, someone from the Iranian bank signed for it, but who owned the plane? Who loaded the money? Who did you deliver the money to? And the fact is, we're giving $1.7 billion to the Iranians, and we don't even get so much as a receipt. That itself is very troubling.
Unbelievable. Michael, question here. As a former Pentagon official, and you may choose not to answer this, and we've kind of touched on this in the past, Donald Trump has claimed that generals, flag officers, some top-quality flag officers have been reduced, so to speak, to rubble because of the administration. And what they have kind of suggested is that they don't want to hear any bad news. And, you know, their opinion does not count when it comes to national security. Does that have much credence?
You know, Bill, it does, but it's not just the Obama administration. I've been frustrated when I hear generals say, when you ask what's the strategy, and they say, we can't do this because the Congress would never go for it. It's not the general's job to decide what Congress would go for. It's the general's job just to lay out a strategy and then let Congress take the responsibility and explain why they're not going to abide by it.
Well, this goes back to what we first started our segments with, Michael. It has to do with leadership. If you believe in something enough to fall on your sword for it, can you convince Congress? Can you convince the people based on a vision and an objective? Do you have the gravitas to make that happen, you know, the way a Douglas MacArthur or maybe even a George Patton would have done?
You know, you're absolutely right there. We need leadership. I mean, leadership has evaporated across the American bureaucracy. We really need to find it again.
Michael Rubin, thank you for being with us. Michael Rubin from the American Enterprise Institute on Bill Martinez Live.
This report is brought to you by Bank of America, working with home and design experts Aaron and Ben Napier. It's officially fall, and football fans are prepping for a season of game day entertaining. Here's a winning recipe sure to impress your guests.
In our home, it's not game day without Mississippi pimento cheese. Just mix a pack of cream cheese, 2 cups of cheddar, and 1/3 cup of mayo with a jar of pimentos, garlic powder, and cayenne. The cheese is great with crackers, but no matter what, it'll be gone by the end of the game.
To stack up on ingredients, we use our Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, so we earn 2% cash back at grocery stores and now at wholesale clubs. We also earn 3% cash back on gas for the first $2,500 in combined grocery, wholesale clubs, and gas purchases each quarter, and 1% on all other purchases. With those rewards, there's always plenty of pimento cheese to go around in our home.
For more information, visit bankofamerica.com/getcashback. That's bankofamerica.com/getcashback. I'm Taylor Purdee.
Will the government protect your family from Iran and North Korea's newest weapon, EMP? We buy guns to protect ourselves, home, health, and car insurance for accidents. Maybe you also have food storage. But how would you keep your refrigerator running in a long-term EMP blackout? Using tested military designs, the Solark EMP-hardened solar generator protects and powers your critical appliances for years without burying items underground or wrapping them in aluminum foil. Unlike other preps, Solark is used every day to help offset your electric bill automatically. Visit PortableSolarLLC.com to learn how easily expandable the system is. Solark is the most affordable and powerful solution on the market. The whole system even fits in the back of a pickup or SUV and can install in less than an hour. See for yourself why Solark beats other off-grid systems at PortableSolarLLC.com. Don't wait for the government. Go to PortableSolarLLC.com to learn why Solark is energy insurance for your family.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
Millennials, know what you believe and why. Bill Martinez, live.
They come into America. They come into America. They come into America. They come into America today. Today.
Your program, your calls.
Hey, it's all about you. Why not? This is Bill Martinez coming to you fresh every day, Monday through Friday, 3 hours, 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific. Good to have you along with us. Just about 28 minutes before the top of the hour right now. Scott, I'm sorry, I missed your... we do have him. Excellent. Okay, great. We were just waiting for our next guest here, and definitely have been looking forward to talking with Alberto Gonzalez, who served as the White House counsel, U.S. Attorney General in the George W. Bush administration. He is the Dean and Doyle Rogers Distinguished Professor of Law at Belmont University College of Law in Nashville, Tennessee. A.G. Gonzalez was the 80th Attorney General of the United States from 2005 to 2007, former Texas Secretary of State and Justice on the Texas Supreme Court. He served in the White House as counsel to the president from 2001 to 2005. You may not realize that he was also an Air Force veteran, attended the U.S. Air Force Academy, graduated from Rice University and Harvard Law School. Attorney General Gonzalez, good to have you with us. How you doing, sir?
Okay, well, that was quite an introduction.
Well, there's so much more to talk. I mean, here it is. I mean, for you, you know, former Attorney General of the U.S., former counsel to the president, the only lawyer and only Hispanic to hold both these positions, you know, quite an honor, you know, when you think about your place in history and, you know, what you have to share with us. And I've been looking forward to your book, True Faith and Allegiance.
Well, you're right. I've been very privileged in my life. I owe a lot of that, of course, to my parents and to George W. Bush, who gave me several once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. And I have chronicled my life and my service in my new book, True Faith and Allegiance, which came out last week. So I hope I hope your listeners give it a look.
Well, more than a look, I believe, hey, you need to pick it up and really be encouraged here, because, you know, you look back at your background as you write, you know, you were born to a poor but proud working class family of all places in Humble, Texas, I guess, appropriately named. You know, seven kids in the family and in a two bedroom house. And it was kind of a typical, post World War II Hispanic family. Gosh, I remember there were six of us in a two bedroom home and, one bathroom that was outside.
Well, our bathroom was inside, but I do remember going to my grandparents' house and going to the bathroom that was outside. So yeah, we were poor, but, despite that, you know, you don't know you're poor. When you're a child, and I certainly didn't, and I learned a lot of valuable lessons and values of self-responsibility, the value of education, and of course, faith was very important in our family, and
exactly.
I really give a great deal of credit to my mom and my father for the way that they raised us, and it put me on the right path, quite frankly, and it led to a lot of great things that have happened later on in my life.
Well, I got to tell you, in our home, as long as we had tortillas, we didn't know about poverty, you know. That's the way we rolled,
yeah.
You know.
I tell this story about when we had a daily ritual in my house when I was a very young boy. I always wanted to be up and have breakfast with my dad.
Yeah.
And my mom always made the same thing for breakfast, eggs and tortillas, and always the same thing for lunch for my dad, beans and tortillas. I mean,
yes,
that was just our daily thing.
Right.
Yep.
Well, I know my mother, just another side story, again, to, you know, kind of put this in context a little bit here, you know, with a Hispanic upbringing, is I remember when my dad started making enough money, he was, you know, came out of World War II, was in the European theater, and was a medic, and then, you know, here he is raising a family, and my mother was so proud when she got to the point where we didn't have to rely so much on tortillas. And I remember one time telling her, I go, Mom, what happened to all the tortillas? You know, we love it. She goes, well, your dad's making enough money. I go, well, no, hey, I mean, you know, we want tortillas. And she looked at my dad, and my dad said, hey, bring on the tortillas. Let's go.
It's hard to find, of course. One of the things I lament about being in Nashville, and believe me, there's so many things I love about being here. It's just a great town. We've been so happy. We've been here 5 years.
Right.
And we're so happy. But it's been a little bit of a challenge to find the same kind of good Mexican food and good tortillas that we had readily available in Texas, of course.
Yes, exactly. Well, here you are with George W. Bush. We're going to fast forward here. Talk about 9/11, which we just celebrated the 15th year. And you have a president who comes in thinking he's going to deal with social issues. You know, we're going to take on welfare. We're going to take on education. And suddenly, with three planes crashing and doing the devastation and the horror that they brought upon the people, he became a wartime president just like that.
Absolutely. And you forgot to mention immigration. That was another
yes.
thing we were going to tackle with the important Hispanic community. But, and, you know, what is great about this story is that he knew immediately we were at war. Someone might otherwise view it as sort of a criminal matter and say, you know, we're going to gather evidence and we're going to use our police to prosecute people. But he knew immediately that we were going to pull all levers of federal power to respond. We were going to use our military. We're going to use our law enforcement. We're going to use our intelligence. We're going to go after their money. You know, he was ready to go. He knew immediately what he had to do. And all of us, we took our cues from the leader of this organization, the federal government. And that's true in any organization, particularly in a time of crisis. You know, you look to the leader and immediately he knew he had a job to do to protect America. And we just simply followed his lead.
You know, post Bush, so much has been, you know, maligned about this president. Has been defined by the progressives, by the left. And I knew this was going to happen, is that on the other side of his presidency, that the truth was going to come out and there would be a sobering perspective. Others in the administration have offered their perspective, and True Faith and Allegiance is your opportunity to, write the record a bit.
Well, and I don't shy away from talking about all the controversial issues. I talk about Guantanamo. I talk about military commissions. I talk about the application of the Geneva Conventions. I talk about enhanced interrogation techniques. I talk about electronic surveillance, and I do so to try to give people a better perspective of why these things were necessary and why and how that they were effective. And maybe I might change some minds, but even if I don't, I hope that readers will come away with the understanding about how hard we tried to get it right, often taking months to get to the right outcome. We worked very, very hard to get it right, to protect our country in a way that was lawful and effective.
Well, we were, you know, a bit scrambling here, you know, based on the information that we had, whether, you know, you want to talk about Iraq, you know, why did we go after Iraq? I mean, you still have people saying, you know, I was against it before I was for it. You know, you get the whole, you know, the whole breadth of perspective on this. I mean, here's the opportunity to talk about, you know, why did we go to Iraq?
Well, you know, the challenge we have in sort of discussing Iraq is today we look at it with a 2016 mindset.
Exactly.
You know,
right.
We're tired of war. We've seen the mistakes that we've been made, and it's easy to say, gosh, that was a mistake. But if you put yourself in the mindset of 2002 or early 2003, you know, you still have the smoke coming out of the World Trade Center towers, which have fallen. We've just experienced 3,000 people killed in New York City and others killed at the Pentagon and, of course, in Pennsylvania. And so President Bush had that mindset where nothing like this is going to happen again. We're going to prevent another attack. And once we have information, intelligence, that Saddam Hussein has stockpiled the weapons of mass destruction and he's developing a relationship with al-Qaeda, we worked very hard to make sure, President Bush worked hard to make sure that nothing, another attack would not happen again. We gave Saddam Hussein ample opportunity to allow inspectors into Iraq to give up any weapons of mass destruction. And he simply refused, and therefore President Bush felt compelled to take action. If there was a mistake here, a mistake within the intelligence, I can't speak for President Bush, but if we knew then what we know today, would we have gone in? Probably not. But again, the mistake was not in what we did. The mistake was in the intelligence.
Exactly. It's always that 20/20 hindsight perspective once again. That needs to be part of the discussion. We're visiting with former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. His book, brand new, just released.
Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with Principal Office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
It started at Bunko Night. A little tickle in my throat, says Sandra. Then comes Colin barking like a seal. That cough, that's the flu. And then it spreads to Edna, to Wiley, to Marjorie. But when it comes to your door, you won't be answering because you got your flu shot at Rite Aid, where they care about you and your health. So while they're seeing doctors and sweating through fevers, you'll be teaching your granddaughter the two-deck shuffle. Shield yourself at Rite Aid before it's too late. If you're over 65, the CDC recommends flu and pneumonia shots. No appointments necessary, and they're free with Medicare Part B. Rite Aid. With us, it's personal. Flu vaccines available while supplies last. Age restrictions apply in some states. See pharmacy for details.
Having a place to go after school will make you a better student. Having an outlet to express yourself will make you a better artist. Having something to do together will make you a better family. At The Y, we're helping build better friends, listeners, writers, swimmers, scientists, and musicians, one chance at a time. Give the gift of opportunity. Donate to The Y at ymca.net/give. The Y, for a better us.
There is an affordable alternative to the high cost of healthcare that offers freedom from insurance while providing compliance with the Obamacare individual mandate. Imagine having access to quality, affordable healthcare that allows you the freedom to choose your doctor and hospital. Members can share up to 100% of necessary medical expenses, including some alternative treatments. Find out how you and your family can contain healthcare costs without giving up your freedom. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
As a doctor, I see patients every day who are losing their vision to age-related macular degeneration, also known as AMD. If you have blurry vision or blind spots, they can be symptoms of AMD, and if untreated, could lead to blindness. The good news? AMD can be managed with effective clinically approved treatments that may reverse some vision loss. For free AMD information, contact the Foundation Fighting Blindness at 1-800-BLINDNESS. That's 1-800-BLINDNESS. There is a cure in sight.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom106.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 106.com. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom106.com.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
You're listening to Bill Martinez live. Your program, your calls, your opinions. Bill Martinez live.
Hey, it's all about you, America. Your opinion really does count here. If we're going to get this country back on track, all hands are required to get on deck. After all, this is a country of, for, and by we the people. 14 minutes before the top of the hour, we're visiting with Judge Alberto Gonzalez, right on the heels of the 15th anniversary of 9-1-1, his book, True Faith and Allegiance, basically a tell-all on his experience working for President Bush. In it, the judge goes in depth on how his faith and family kept him grounded. Attorney General Gonzalez, you know, you mentioned that a moment ago. I mean, for all that you went through, you know, I think back in, you know, history with other leaders and how they ended up, you know, going into their prayer closets and saying, God, help us.
Well, there's no question about it, you know, because at this level, whether it's a cabinet secretary or governor or certainly president, I mean, these are the most difficult decisions that you can make. I don't think you can serve effectively as president of the United States if you don't believe in God mm-hmm. and in the power of prayer, because the decisions are so big. They're bigger than any one person. And for me, you know, I want to believe in a higher power that I'm doing the right thing when a life hangs in the balance. For a president, for example, whether it's sending men and women into combat or making a decision whether to commute someone on federal death row, you want to make, you know, you want to get it right. And so faith and belief in God, I think, is so very, very important, so very vital in the person who works in the Oval Office.
Well, and here you are as the, you know, the top attorney in the land as attorney general, and you have this dynamic tension between a literal interpretation of the Constitution versus this movement that has been growing over the years that, you know, as President Obama would say, you know, our Constitution is elastic. It's open for broader interpretation.
Well, you're right. There is a divide in this country in terms of how is the Constitution to be written, to be interpreted. The Constitution does not say who's to interpret it, does not say how it's to be interpreted. Now, because of a decision issued hundreds of years ago by the Supreme Court, we have relied upon the court to have the final say in the interpretation of the Constitution. But why have a written document to govern our lives if we're not going to follow the words in that document, as far as I'm concerned? I think the founders envisioned that we would have this document to guide us. And if we wanted to have change in that guidance, that change would be reflected in a democratic process of constitutional amendments. And over time, I think we've gotten away from that. We've relied more and more upon the courts to find new rights. And I think that's dangerous. While the rights of the courts have perhaps recently announced over the years, some of them I agree with, some not. Nonetheless, those rights should be, if they're going to be part of our sort of our soul, they should be rights that we all have a role in participating in and saying yes or no. This should be part of our governing document, and not relying upon nine unelected judges.
When there is seemingly activism that raises its head in the judiciary, I sense that it's got to be like chalk hitting the chalkboard and just, you know, gets to your nerves just a bit.
Well, yeah, it's more than that. I mean, it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. It really is dangerous because if, in fact, judges can be making pronouncements about our Constitution based upon how they see society evolving, their perception of societal norms and how they're changing, or their own personal values or moral, you know, moral compass, then you almost have to, in choosing that justice, talk to them about you know, what are your beliefs? What are your laws? And I think that too is dangerous. And I, you know, when we worked in the White House in selecting two justices to the court, we never asked questions about, you know, how do you feel about abortion? How do you feel about the case of Roe v. Wade? What we asked about is, how do you see your job as a judge? How do you interpret the Constitution? What's the right way to interpret a statute passed by Congress? These are the kinds of questions we ask because we believe this will lead us to the answer that would guide us in deciding whether or not this is the right person to sit on the highest court of the land.
Exactly. Well, here we are since the passing of Judge Antonin Scalia. We're operating with eight judges in the Supreme Court, not nine. What is your position on this?
Well, of course, I dedicate a chapter to the selection of Supreme Court justices and the whole process we went through in the selection of John Roberts and Sam Alito. This is probably one of the most important decisions that a president has to make, other than sending men and women into battle. And I am on record in saying that when the vacancy occurred, that a president has an obligation, once he has determined an appropriate candidate, to make a nomination. And so I had no problem with President Obama making the nomination. I can't speak for President Bush. I feel fairly confident in saying if he was ready to go, he would have made a nomination, even though it was his last year in office, just because that's his job, and these decisions are so important. As to confirmation, when I was White House counsel, President Bush nominated good people, and the Democrats blocked them, and it made me mad. They weren't doing their job. Mm-hmm. I got to be consistent. And
yes.
So President Obama has made his nomination. Republicans control the Senate. They should vote. I think they should give Judge Garland, when they're ready, when they've done their due diligence and the background checks and everything, I believe, to be fair, to be consistent, I believe that he's entitled to an up or down vote. They control. They have the votes in the Senate. If they don't want him to go on the court, they can knock him down. Mm-hmm. They can vote against his confirmation. But I know that's contrary to what a lot of Republicans want to hear, because even one vote on that court is so important. And I think they're hopeful that a Republican is going to win the White House, and then we'll put a Republican in that seat. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I have to be consistent with what I believe in, and I believe in equal treatment, equal and fair treatment.
Well, growing up in Texas, and of course being involved in state politics in Texas, and as we mentioned earlier, immigration a big issue. President Bush going in saying, "Look, we need to address immigration," and here it is; it's been kicked down the road, and 15 years later, we're still dealing with a broken immigration system. What do you have to say?
Well, I agree. It's embarrassing. We have some challenges in our immigration policy. It's not right that we have 11 to 15 minutes. We don't even know what
know the number
is.
Exactly.
Exactly, but yeah. You know, let's just assume it's 11 million people. The fact that they're here in some kind of unlawful status is not right. We are a nation of laws. On the other hand, we all have to concede we are a nation of immigrants, and we're also a compassionate nation. So we've got to accommodate these two principles. And I'm on record as saying, and I wrote a book about this, supporting comprehensive immigration reform. that looks at border security. I'm not sure that I can say I support a wall. I'm not sure that that makes sense. I think it's going to cost a lot of money, but we do need more border security. We need tougher workplace enforcement. We need to revise our visa process. It's broken today. So now 50% of the people that are here unlawfully came here lawfully and now are here unlawfully on an expired visa. So we need to fix that. We do need to, the 11 million that are here, we need to figure out a system where the ones who are not, who are criminals, they go out, they have to be deported, they have to be rounded up and they have to go. Those others who are not a problem, that can provide for themselves, that are willing to pay a fine, maybe willing to pay back taxes, they can continue to be in this country in some kind of legal status. Mm-hmm. And they can be productive members and they contribute to various services and service industries in this country.
Right.
As to citizenship, I'm sort of agnostic about it. I think most people that come to this country unlawfully, they don't come here for citizenship. They come here for a better way of life. If we want to give them citizenship, they'll take it. But I think we can have a discussion about whether or not there should be a pathway to citizenship.
Yeah, if they want to add to the proposition, I don't think anybody's an argument in that. And in some cases, we have immigrants who are not citizen that joined our military, right?
Exactly. Those are very sympathetic situations where someone goes to college or someone serves in the military with honor. Yes, I mean, why not make it easier for them if they want to pursue citizenship to do it? Those are precisely the kind of people we want as fellow citizens, a veteran. Yes, absolutely.
Well, Attorney General Gonzalez, I got to tell you, with President Bush, what I respected so much about him was that he didn't complain about, what was handed to him, what the Clinton administration handed to him. In fact, I've said repeatedly here that when we found ourselves at war after 9/11, people failed to realize how Bill Clinton was able to do so well with the budget, and that was because he blighted the military. And then they wanted to blame the president, President Bush, for sending our military into war under-equipped.
Well, we certainly had warning signs about al-Qaeda. We had the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. We had the bombing of our embassies in Africa. We had the USS Cole bombing by al-Qaeda. We knew they were a threat, but I'll give President Bush credit. I remember when he spoke with the 9/11 Commission and he was asked about what did you know and could you have stopped it if you knew it beforehand, the attacks. And referring to Bill Clinton and himself, he said, we would have moved heaven and earth to stop this attack if either one of us knew about it. And this is the kind of person he was. He knows about the responsibilities as President of the United States. And so I thought it was a very gracious thing for him to say.
Well, Judge Alberto Gonzalez, his new book, right on the heels of the 15th anniversary of 9/11, True Faith and Allegiance, which will be linked on our website, available at all the usual places. Judge Gonzalez, thank you so much. It was an honor to have some time and to be able to talk about your new book.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Worried about lead, fluoride, and other contaminants in your drinking water? Get a ProPure with the Pro1G 2.0 cleanable reusable filter and remove up to 200 contaminants. Drink water the way nature meant it to be. Clean, crisp, and refreshing. See the complete line of ProPure products, including the new ProMax shower filter. There's a ProPure for you. Visit your authorized ProPure dealer for details or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com.
Are the answers to your present and future hidden in your past? Akashic Readings help you learn to unlock the answers for love, finances, weight loss, self-esteem, confusion, grief and loss, and more. Akashic Email Readings by Dr. Kelly Maroon, Ph.D. are specially priced right now. Learn more at Dr. Kelly Maroon's website, AkashicUniversal.com, spelled AkashicUniversal.com. Change your life today. Become one with your true path with intention on purpose. Visit AkashicUniversal.com.
Cancer category.